Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Operation Gundog. We are on episode 13, and we will be talking about finished hunt tests for our three-part series. This is three of three. We're going to be speaking with Brandon Sweezy from Northern Air Retrievers. You can find him on Instagram at Northern Air Retrievers. Underscores in between the words. With me, as always, is Dominic. You can find him at The Puddle Hound on Instagram. And myself, John McCarter. You can find me at Bayou Gundog. For this episode, we want to thank our sponsors, Dirty Duck Coffee. If you are interested in trying some delicious coffee, you can hit them up on their website or on Instagram, Dirty Duck Coffee, for a 15% discount on the deliciousness. The code is OGD15. Also, update from our Instagram page, Operation Gundog, we have a new link in our bio that has a link tree. That includes all of our podcast platforms that you can easily use to click right in directly into our podcast. With that being said, let's kick off the content of this episode. And Brandon, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you located? How long have you been training?
Yep. My name is Brandon Sweezy, and like John mentioned earlier, I run Northern Air Retrievers. We are over here in West Michigan in Nunica. I've been at this now probably three and a half years.
Quite an impressive resume so far, too. I know you've got a lot of young dogs, and I know you've got a lot of young dogs that have accomplished a lot of big things or bigger things, considering the time frame. I know Jones has finished his HRCH, and I believe he's working on his master right now.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
And now you're doing this full-time?
Yes, sir. Yep. This was our first year, and then next year we'll be hitting it pretty hard.
Living the dream.
Yeah, something like that.
right on. So, although I know it's newer to you, participating in finished, but for those that don't know, can you explain what happens in a finished hunt test? What are we looking at as far as setups go, distances, and all that?
So your typical finish setup is going to be, obviously, you have a triple mark, you're going to run a blind, and then you will have a diversion coming back from either your last mark or your blind, and then you'll have to honor as well. HRC test, right. Finish test, they're really not throwing bomb marks. They're going to be typically right in the range of 65, 70, sometimes 80 yards. Blinds anywhere from... I think we ran one that was 43 yards up to, right around 90 to 100. So it all can vary just depending on the judges, really.
So each day you're going to have a water setup and a land setup. Yep. And similarly to seasoned, you might have that diversion bird, but different from seasoned is you're going to see triples and you're going to do honoring. Am I right?
That's right. Yes, sir.
What's the differences in the distance of those marks between land and water? Is there much difference at the finish level?
Yeah, there are a little bit. The first finish test I ran, to be honest with you, I think the longest water mark on our Saturday test was 30 yards. So pretty much all three birds were breaking birds, but the thing with finish test is that every mark has a purpose. They're in that spot for a reason. So it's not always the distance. They're just well-placed marks.
Right. They've thought them out a little bit more. And then with the blinds, are they typically a little closer to the marks and finished as opposed to in seasoned where they're kind of in a different direction to cause a little less confusion for the dogs?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to have your blinds right in with the marks.
Right. So in between the marks, even.
Yep.
At times.
Yep.
Okay. With all that being said, what do you think are some of the more common reasons for not passing a finish test?
Well, the main thing that the judges are looking for in finished is control with your dog. You have to walk up to the line off lead. They want to see control. As you sit down at the bucket, they want to see control. Everything is control and finished. If you have a dog that's acting wild, you're going to get marked down for that, obviously. I've seen a lot of dogs break on the honor bucket. That's another huge thing. And then, you know, honestly, they do a lot of down the shore water blinds that I've seen in finish tests. And if you're not working those, it's going to be bad news real quick. They make it very clear this is a water blind, not a land blind. So if your dog's hopping right out early, they want you to get back in. The other thing, too, that a lot of people will fail on is you can only handle once in the series or per day. So, you know, if you have to handle on land in the morning and then you have to handle on water in the afternoon, you're out. So a lot of people will go out that way. And by handle, I mean handle on a mark, not the blind.
Right. Right. What about controlled breaks? Is there any of that, or is there a limit to how much of that, I guess?
Controlled breaks are fine to a point. Judges will usually say if your dog gets out past this point, you're done.
Right. So what are some things that you do early on in your dog's foundation that would allow you to find more success once you've reached this level? Like, you're going all the way back to obedience, and if you have, you know, some gaps in your training, this is where the issues will really start to show.
Well, I think the biggest thing is if you know that you're going to run these hunt test games, train for it. You know, work with holding blinds all the time. I mean, you don't have to go out every training setup and throw a triple and a blind or a double and a blind, but just do little things that'll set you up for success running these hunt tests. And like I said, holding blinds, every time we train, we're sitting in a holding blind. You know, if you're going to run HRC, work with a gun quite often. Get the dog used to that. Work on honoring. Even if you're not running the finish level, still, you know, if you're out with a buddy, honor while your buddy's dog's running. Little things like that, a lot of people, I feel, overlook if they're going to start running hunt tests. And then they get to the hunt test and, you know, their dog breaks on the honor bucket because their dog doesn't know not everything that hits the ground isn't for you. You know, does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that's something that you have a lot of opportunities to do, you know, leading up to, especially if you're training regularly, to do some honoring, you know, even much, much earlier on than when you're even starting finished. I agree with that. You mentioned holding blinds. And so I'm curious, what are the differences with your dog being on lead or off lead rather, finished versus seasoned as far as coming up to the bucket and whatnot?
So in seasoned, you're walking all the way up to the line on lead. They, right. You know, the judges will tell you that they want to see control in seasoned, but they're not knocking you for that. In finished, you're going to come out of that last holding blind and walk to a certain point that the judge will, you know, tell you. And then you're going to take your dog off lead and proceed to the line from there. And from that point, they want to see finished control. And by that, they basically are saying, we don't want to see your dog acting like a fool, you know, control all the way up to the line.
Right.
With that, are you able to cue your dog any? Like, are you able to, you know, give a heel?
Oh, yeah.
Heel as you're getting towards the line?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I was just asked this question the other day. What do you prefer more, AKC or HRC? And truthfully, it's HRC for the simple fact that you can talk to your dog the whole time.
Right.
You know, you start your test by blowing your duck call. And until you release your dog, you can sit. No, heel. And
right.
It's so much easier than, you know, with AKC test. Once you signal the judge, you got to be quiet. There's nothing you can do. So your dog's creeping 5 feet out and there's nothing you can do about it. So that's my favorite thing about HRC.
I know, you know, the foundation of what HRC is as closely imitating a hunt scenario as possible, like the whole camo, head to toe, all that stuff. And, you know, I think that's reflective in being able to talk to your dog, because, you know, I've never known somebody in a holding blind to not have to tell their dog sit as birds are coming in, or, you know, guns start shooting. You know, exactly. It's a common thing. So it's reflective in those HRC tests that you're able to talk your dog.
Right, exactly.
So we talked a little bit about what we're looking for from the dog, but can you also talk a little bit about what we're looking for from the handler? I guess where I'm kind of going with this is, let's say your dog's running a blind, like how much handling is too much and how much letting the dog hunt is too much? You know, if you get the dog to the vicinity, do you allow them to hunt a little bit, or do they want you to put them right on the bird?
So basically the judges are going to let you know if you need to put your dog on the bird. They want you to proceed to the area of the fall. And if the dog's putting on a very good hunt in the area of the fall, they're going to let the dog hunt. If they start drifting way outside the area of the fall, they'll let you know, put your dog on the bird. I've seen it happen. We ran in a hay bale field, and the last bird down, if the dog took a bad line to it, they were telling you, put your dog on the bird, because it wasn't fair to all the other dogs that took an incredible line to it. As far as, you know, running a blind, you can blow your whistle as many times as you want, but your dog needs to be taking your casts. That's the biggest thing. There's not a said amount of whistle refusals that you can have, but the judges have a number in their mind. We'll say it's 4. I always count personally myself in my head. They're dogs. They're not perfect. They're going to blow you off every once in a while. So if you can just make a mental note in your head, me personally, if I have 5 blow-offs, I'm just going to call you back in. Because at that point, you're doing more bad than good by letting them pick that bird up. You're basically rewarding them for, you know, not doing what they're told. But like I said,
right,
you know, there's it's not a set amount. Like, the judges aren't going to say you have 4 refusals and then you're done. Basically, run your blind. As long as your dog's taking your whistles, taking your cast, it doesn't matter how many whistles you have.
So you've done started, you've done seasoned, and you've done finished. I'm curious, yes, what do you think is the gap? Is it between started and seasoned, or seasoned and finished?
Oh, man. Probably started to seasoned.
So you would say seasoned is more like finished than seasoned is like started?
Yeah, yeah.
Because of the multiples and the steadiness.
You have so much more going on. You know, I mean, you have a double now. You have a blind. You have a walk-up. I mean, it's just a massive, massive jump from season to finish. Right. It's a whole nother league, but they're somewhat similar. You know what I mean?
So would you say the distances aren't that much different between seasoned and finished? It's just more of the same, I guess, you know, more marks, more blinds and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, the thing that you're going to see with finished more than you'll see with seasoned is your finished marks are going to be very, very well placed. They're there for a reason. They might not be 120 yards, but it could be a 60-yard mark, but it's going to be a very, very tough mark. The last test that we ran for Jones's finished title, it was Sunday on water, and one of the marks was, oh, I don't know, maybe 70 yards, probably 40 yards on land, and then the rest was through water. But from where the dog was sitting and the dog's perspective, when that bird landed, all they could see was a splash. So they would get out there, they'd get to the water's edge, and I'd say about 80% of the dogs would hunt short because they couldn't actually see a bird fell. All they saw was a splash. So, like I said, everything is very, very well placed. It's not always about the distance.
Absolutely. That makes sense. All right. Well, that's most of the questions I had about the test specifically. I know Dominic had some other questions specifically about you and your dogs, which I'm equally as interested in.
Yeah, I had a quick question as far as the test go. I know it's pretty common with AKC tests to have a land, water, land mark where they're having to, you know, traverse water, get back out, pick up the mark, and then come back through. How common is that type of setup in HRC, if at all?
The first test that we ran, the Sunday series, water series, was all pretty much land, water, land. It was basically, I guess we'll call it like a little canal piece of water. It was probably 40 yards wide, but every mark was landing up on land on the other side of the piece of water. So I don't think it's that uncommon for that to happen.
And a follow-up to that is, I know it's hard to kind of speak from a judge's perspective because it is kind of subjective, but what are they looking at as far as, you know, if your dog doesn't take a perfectly straight line back to you when re-entering the water or even entering the water for a splash bird, are they looking to, you know, mark you down if you don't take a square entry or if your dog doesn't take that angled entry?
They're going to tell you at the briefing in the morning, or if you're running water in the afternoon, they'll tell you at the briefing in the afternoon, this is a water test. And by that, they mean, even if you're just cutting a little sliver of water, they want you to get in the water. Now, like you just said, coming back, you're not being judged on coming back. They can cheat around banks, whatever they want. You're not going to be marked down for that. But they will let you know that on set mark here, we want you to get wet.
So I was wondering, you know, you mentioned Jones has his finish title. He's working on master right now. How old is he?
Oh, I try to figure this out every day and I never actually do it. He will be 2 on January 13th. So wow. If any of you guys are good at math, you can figure it out real quick, but
he's 22 months, I think. All right. Today's the 14th. So still pretty impressive though.
For sure.
Yeah, man.
I thought it was super funny. I saw in your story, what was it, last week or so, Jones had his finished title before he ever went on his first actual hunt.
Yeah. You know what? It really is funny. I took him on, I think, 2 or 3 hunts last year, and we either didn't see anything or, you know, one of my buddy's dogs would break and she'd pick up all the birds. But I mean, I'm not that worried about it. I have goals with Jones, and obviously I want him to hunt, and he's gonna hunt. There's no doubt about it. But if it takes a little bit, I mean, he picked up his first actual duck hunting 2 weeks ago. We went up to the middle zone opening day, so he did finally get his first actual duck hunting retrieve. So we can check that one off the list.
That's awesome, man.
That is awesome. And that's funny to think that your dog picked up, you know, how many ducks over the process of going from started to finished before your dog ever got the opportunity to pick one up in an actual hunt.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. And you know, a lot of people, they give me crap about it. But like I said, I bought Jones with the intentions of you know, really, I want to run hunt tests with this dog. I mean, I ran them before with a few other dogs, and they were great dogs, but they just weren't capable of getting to the level that I wanted to run at. So we bought him, and it was like, all right, this is what we're going to do. Let's do it. We're going to go full out with it. So,
and with that, what is full out? Like, do you have an end goal with him in mind, something that you're really striving for?
I do. Yeah. We're, like you had mentioned earlier, we're working on master right now. He just picked up two master passes this past weekend. We ran a double master here in Michigan. So he's got two master passes now. We are running Virginia this weekend, another master test, and then South Carolina in November is another double master. We'll hopefully finish that up there. And then next year, I think we'll just run a handful of HRC tests, and then the big goal is running the Fall Grand next year.
That's an awesome goal, and I think that, you know, doing master is only going to help you with that too, practicing on that big stage.
For sure, yep. And you know, like we had talked about earlier, with master, you can't talk to your dog at the line, and so obviously control is a major factor there, and that's what the Grand is all about, is 100% control of your dog throughout five whole series. So
I know the Grand just ended today. I haven't seen how many dogs made it through, but I want to say it was almost 800 dogs, maybe 779 or 778 that had entered, but I'm curious to know what percentage or what the over under was there.
Well, I know going into the fifth series, I think there was 250 something that were going to the fifth. So,
right. So at least the third did, yeah. You know, on the last day. And so at least two thirds didn't make it through.
Yeah. Speaking of the Grand, Brimley's mother actually just passed the Grand this afternoon. It was her second pass, so she's now a Grand Hunting Retriever champion.
Congratulations, man. That your pedigree just got a little bit better.
Yes, sir. It wasn't already
good enough. Awesome, man.
Yeah,
I know a lot of dogs that already had Grand passes going into this Grand that didn't make it. So I think that it was a hard Grand, and I think that that's a testament to a really good dog there.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Grand is – that's the cream of the crop there, in my opinion, honestly.
So you just kind of mentioned her, but Brimley, tell us a little bit about Brimley.
Brimley is the up-and-comer here. She is 8 or 9 months. Again, I'm not that great at math. She'll be a year January 30th. Like I said, her mom, her name's Coco. She just got her grand title. Her dad is a dog named Chaos. He's a Grand Hunting Retriever champion, master hunter. She's the next prodigy, man. She's a little firecracker. She's advancing just a little bit slower than I was hoping for, but I'm not that worried about it. I kind of am basing everything that I do right now off of Jones, and that's a horrible thing because he's kind of a freaking when it comes to training.
Right.
So
I think it's tough not to compare.
It really is. I struggle with it a lot, but you know, I just in a way it's good because it reminds me to just slow down. And you know, you hear people say this all day, every day. Every dog is different. So you can't go into training with one dog with the expectations of your other dog. You know what I mean? You got to work the dog that's in front of you. So she's doing really good though. She's going to be, I mean, like I said, she's smart as a whip. She's a little firecracker. So it's just time. She's just maturing a little bit slower. That's all.
So you mentioned her dad is Chaos.
Yes, sir.
Right. Is that the same Chaos I keep seeing ads for in the HRC periodical?
Oh, the Hunting Retriever magazine?
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about running on the verge of chaos, yes.
I want to say that's it. John, does that sound like that one dog
he's
talking about?
He's a yellow lab. Yep.
Yes. Yep, that's him. That's neat. That's awesome. You said Chaos, and I was like, where have I heard that name? It just dawned on me.
Yeah, he's a bad dude. In a good way.
Yeah. With a name like Chaos, you ought to be, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't name your dog You can't name your dog Chaos and he's like a biscuit eater. Like, that's like, just doesn't happen. Or Bill's dog Aries' dad's name is Rage. So, you know.
Yeah. I just listened to Bill's episode the other day. It was really good. I liked hearing about him and Aries. He's a good dude. I talk with him quite often.
Man, I can tell you a lot of people were excited about Bill's episodes, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me knowing that your episode was coming up too. So kudos to you. I think you got some people that are going to be excited to hear this one. I know I was excited to have you on and excited to have this series with the hunt test series, really, with the started season and finished, because for me, this is something that I would like to hear myself. So why not just create it? I don't think there's a lot of podcast info out there on specific levels of hunt tests. I think it's hard to find good resources. You can find some stuff on YouTube, some videos, but there's not a lot of conversation about it. You're just kind of observing and watching and trying to figure out what's going on. But it's nice to have a little bit of explanation from somebody that's been through it. So happy to have you on this episode.
Absolutely, man.
Well, we're glad to hear you enjoyed Bill's episode. So if you haven't already, go back and leave us a review since you enjoyed it. We definitely appreciate your input.
I'll do that for sure.
Well, back to the topic at hand, here about Brimley and Jones. Jones got that title pretty quickly there. Did he have any speed bumps along the way, any hiccups at hunt tests? And if he did, what were they?
You know what? Honestly, we'll just go right through it. He I think he got his started title at 7 months, I think it was. And I had ran two dogs through started prior to Jones, and I was a nervous wreck every time. When I ran Jones, it was the first time that I went into it like, we got this. It's no big deal. So then the following year, we ran seasoned. Obviously, the nerves were there, but I knew he could do the work. I really can't think of anything that really tripped him up at all. He pretty much just breezed through that. We only had to run three of them. And then, I don't know, a few months later, we started running finished. And I think it was the first finished test that we ran. It was a down-the-shore blind, probably 90 yards or so. They had to go over a point, and then the rest of the blind was down the shore. And he hopped out early after the point. And I struggled so hard to get him back in the water. And in my head, I figured I was out. Like I said, you know, you're up there at the line counting refusals. And I had three refusals in my head. And I'm like, we're done. That's it. And, you know, he picked up his blind, came back. And the judges said, we'll see you on land, but you need to be very, very clean. Meaning you're on the bubble, so don't screw up on land. And really, that was the only issue that he had throughout finish. All of his other blinds were super, super clean. He picked up his marks clean, honored fine. I mean, like I said, for how young he is, I know it's not that uncommon for dogs this young to get through finish, but in my eyes, he's a rock star, man. He's a freak of nature. The things that he's doing is just ridiculous at this age. And there really weren't any major, major hiccups that we had going through the HRC test. As you know, he went 11 for 11 through his finished title and didn't actually fail a test until two weekends ago down in Ohio for it was a master test. But as far as HRC goes, I don't want to say he breezed through it, but he basically breezed through it.
Man, congratulations to make it through there without any hiccups. I know I've been at, you know, the hunt tests that I've been at, there's been some finish tests where, you know, they might have like 30 dogs in a flight and 11 dogs pass, you know.
Yeah, that was the last one that we ran. There was 30 dogs entered, and I think 12 got through it. The judge said for Sunday water, if he would have tweaked just a few things, he could have made that. And he has judged the grand. He said if he would have tweaked a couple things, it could have very easily been a grand water setup. So,
right. I've obviously never ran a finish test, but I've had some quite a few people that I train with from my local HRC that do, and they run in the grand as well. And they, you know, what they say is as they get a little bit closer to the grand, the finish setup start looking a little bit more like the grand because they end up, I guess, being a little bit of a preparation for the grand. Sure. Can you say yep. that, or can you confirm that? Okay.
So, Brandon, I just ran my first start at hunt test, and the first day, land and water, I was an absolute nervous wreck, and I know Sailor probably felt that coming through the lead from my hand shaking, just my nerves going haywire. So what are some things that you do to help combat those nerves?
Like you just said, they can feel what you're feeling. So if you're shaking, you're nervous, they're going to feel it. Obviously, it's easier said than done, but take a deep breath and just relax. When I get into that last holding blind, I'll pop a piece of gum in my mouth. I've heard putting gum in your mouth, chewing gum, the dog just kind of relaxes a little bit more because they can smell that, you know, nervousness on you, if you will. And then there's this really nice stuff called Rescue Remedy that you can take as well. One of the main things that I do before every single hunt test that I run, and it's basically like this little like turkey baster type deal, and it's all natural stuff, and you plop a couple drops underneath your tongue and let it soak in, and not nervous one bit.
Okay, let me ask you this. Is the active ingredient CBD?
No,
it
is not. No.
So what is it? Do you know what it's made of, or
it's
what the components are?
It's like I said, it's called Rescue Remedy. The main ingredient is some kind of flower. I have a bottle of it out in my truck, but I obviously don't have it in front of me. But I'm not even kidding you. You drop three or four drops underneath your tongue, and nerves are completely gone. Shout out to Rescue Remedy.
You know, can you think of any specific examples where you've taken a lesson learned from training Jones and applied it towards Brimley? I know we mentioned, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, and you always have to train the dog in front of you. But do you think there is any general lessons learned by you as a trainer that is helping you in your process with Brimley?
For sure. You need to find out what makes the dog tick. Prime example, when I was going through T pattern with Jones, for the life of me, I could not get him to take an overcast. He would not do it. I did everything I could to get him to take an overcast, and he just wouldn't do it. So he gets jacked up for actual ducks. So what I would do is I'd put bumpers at the back pile and ducks over at the over pile. And sure enough, I'd give him an over and he would jet over there. So with that being said, you just need to figure out what makes your dog tick. And truth be told, I'm still trying to figure that out with Brimley. She is a major, major sweetheart, but she's a little soft as well. I just started collar conditioning her probably 3 weeks ago. She's doing very well with it so far, but she's one of the types of dogs that she's thriving off of praise more so than correction. So if she's doing what she's supposed to be doing, I'm being a high school cheerleader. She loves it. That's what she needs from you to do what you want from her, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think that's a great lesson, you know, learning how your dog learns. I know we've kind of mentioned that in a couple of previous episodes where you got to know what your dog responds to and use that as your advantage in training.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. We've kind of mentioned the love languages. Some dogs, love the cheerleader or maybe it's the little tennis ball throw at the end, or, you know, a little bit of everything, treats or pets or whatever, you know, just like people, I guess, they value things differently.
For sure. And you know what? That's Jones is the same way, man. His big thing is, you know, we'll go out and we'll run a setup. And when he gets back, if he does an awesome job, I'm throwing him three or four happy bumpers. And that's what he lives for. He's another dog that just thrives off you being happy with him. When he's getting those happy bumpers, that's his, he's on the moon at that point. That's what he lives for, is you telling him that he did an awesome job.
That just goes to show how each dog has their own individual personality, and you know, we definitely need to play those up
even at the finished level. I mean,
that's right.
You know,
that's right.
We've talked about this from, you know, our puppy episodes, and now here we are at finished, and that's still like something that you can't lose focus on. Like, you don't, you know, get to the finished level and just become robotic. Like, you still have to, you know, make sure your dog's enjoying it. I know they do, you know, definitely still enjoy it at that level, but I finish up every training session with, you know, bouncing around like a goober, waving the bumper around and tossing a fun bumper, you know.
So exactly. It's, and you know what, man, you know what 90% of these, you know, whoever's listening out there, 99% of these dogs are, they're family pets, man. Love them first, and then, you know, do your work, but always let them know how much you love them. I mean, I've had sessions with Jones where he's a complete idiot, but when we get done, I take a deep breath, throw him a fun bumper, give him a kiss on the head, and say, "Well, you know, we'll get back at it tomorrow." So,
right on. End on a good note.
That's right. Always.
That's one thing I really like about, I guess, some of the posts that I see on your page is, not saying that other trainers don't have that or anything like that, but I definitely notice and can see how much you express that unspoken bond we often talk about as dog trainers when we're training our own dogs, and how much of a bond we do formulate with them.
Absolutely. I tell Jones probably 3 to 4 times a day, "You are my best friend, bud."
Man, now that Dominic mentions that, I do think, I don't know who all does your photography for your page, but if you wanted to give a kudos right now to anybody that's done a good job of capturing, you know, your relationship with your dogs, I think now would be the time, because that is definitely something noticeable on your page.
I would love to. I've got a handful of people that do photos for me. My buddy's wife, who I actually trained a dog, one of Jones's brothers, and sold to him. Her name is Ashley, and she does a lot of photography for me. She actually just did a session 2 or 3 days ago, and I'll be starting to post some of those here really soon. Another buddy of mine is Eric Schaefer. He takes incredible pictures. Check him out on Instagram for sure. Another buddy is Dan Clark. I do a lot of training with him. He's got a dog named Woody, and he takes incredible photos as well.
Awesome. Just wanted to make sure we're getting the recognition out there where it's due.
For sure.
So with all that being said, I guess we can kind of dive off into our updates. Dominic, you want to go first tonight?
Sure. In the continued effort to build confidence in Sailor, we are full steam ahead, still with throwing stuff for her to really test her. Just today, we threw a field trial concept for her, which is not something, you know, I ever thought I'd be showing my dog, but, you know, one of the longest marks we threw today was 170 yards, and she did pretty good on that and kind of surprised me. And, you know, like I said, I never thought I'd be running that type of setup for her. I thought we'd do, you know, HRC, hunt test type marks, and more gun dog type marks, but she's out there rocking some almost inline concept stuff for field trials. So I couldn't be happier with that. Just yesterday, we ran a land water type setup. And again, she exceeded some expectations. She still has a little bit of that cheatiness when she gets to the bank. She wants to square herself up before entering. So like we talked about in previous episodes, I'm kind of letting that go. When we get to the point that we're handling and she's ready to be de-cheated, we'll cross that bridge. But for the time being, we're building confidence. If she wants to square herself up and take out a protractor before she gets in the water, I really don't care so long as she gets in the water, picks up that bumper, and comes back to me. I think that's my major updates for the week. John, what do you got going on there?
Man, kind of more of the same. I haven't had really an opportunity this week to get out with any of the pros that I train with to do like the bigger big dog setup. So I've been doing a lot of blinds on my own. Most of the pros that I've trained with recently ran the Grand or were doing AKC tests the past couple of weekends. So we've been in the water. We've been doing all pattern blinds, you know, went through the poles and then the easy to see black and white bumpers. And then even today we dropped down to the orange bumpers. There's a piece of trash out in the water on the edge of the water today that gave, you know, Bonnie a little extra attention. But she's done so well with the pattern blinds that I was able to handle her off of the piece of trash, which is great. So a little more blind work kind of in preparation for we're trying to run her season test the end of the month. So the last two weekends of this month. But we don't want to do just blinds. And so this weekend, Friday, I'm meeting up with some buddies and running some season setups with the diversion birds and walk-ups as well, because that's like some of the stuff that I really want to practice, like with a winger and with the gunfire and all that. Then this weekend I'm going to be throwing some birds for one of my pro buddies and running some big dog setups. And I've kind of told him what I'm trying to do with Bonnie as well. So he's willing to help me out with that. Other than that, this past weekend, I went and picked up my puppy that I talked about on the previous episode. We did not end up naming her Desi. I ended up naming her Delta because we had a hurricane come through, and she is a little hurricane. She reminds me so much of Bonnie as a puppy. Not that I want to get into the comparisons, but she's a tiny little thing, and you know, I'm throwing the bumper around for her already, and it's as big as her. But she's toting that sucker around the yard and back to me. So it's a fun age right now, other than having to get up with her in the middle of the night to take her out, and she's hollering in the crate like Brimley did, you know.
John, I didn't mean to laugh at you, but Delta is actually the first female name that I have picked out for my next female, whenever that may be. So that's just funny to me.
That's awesome. Well, you know, the hurricane, and we're down here in the South and the Mississippi Delta and all that.
Absolutely. So, that's perfect.
I went to pick her up from Georgia. My hometown is Monroe, Louisiana, where Delta Airlines started, and now it's in Georgia and Atlanta. So that's another little piece of history right there. So I'm one of those types that I guess puts a lot of thought into names. Delta's a good duck dog name, man.
Absolutely. Who's she out of?
She's got a really nice pedigree, especially for a golden. But her mom is the HRCH Gabby, and her dad is an HRCH as well, and he's done some field trials. The dad side is like all field trial side, really, besides him, and then the mom side is all hunt test side. So her maternal grandmother and grandfather are grand hunt and retriever champions, and
okay,
she's got on the dad side, she's got some field trial FCs and AFCs and stuff like that.
Awesome.
So she's got some pretty big shoes to fill. She has the most impressive pedigree of any of my dogs. And, you know, Bonnie and Chief both have nice pedigree. So Chief is actually Delta's uncle, which is pretty cool. So they're slightly related. But she seems more similar to Bonnie than to Chief, if I were to compare them right now. Also, another other big news is I've been looking for a bigger piece of property. I've smoked my wife out of the house with all these dogs. And we agreed to terms on a house today with some acreage. So next month we should be moving into a bigger piece of property and have more room for dogs and puppies and all that stuff.
And you're going to be hosting a housewarming party, and you're going to be giving the details on next week's episode?
Yeah, there we go, man. Absolutely, man. You already got your invitation, huh?
It's in the mail along with Tyler's check.
Right. I will give another shout out to Dirty Duck Coffee, because with getting up in the middle of the night with this 8-week-old puppy and my 7-month-old daughter, I needed some high velocity Dirty Duck Coffee this morning, and I was nice and wired despite the lack of sleep overnight. So thank you to them.
Man, I'm I love that coffee.
I was almost seeing sounds earlier, if that paints the picture for you.
I know you you text me and you're like, man, I've only had one cup of this thing, but geez, I'm ready to start mowing the lawn with a pair of nail clippers.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if I pushed the rich button or something on my coffee maker, but man, I was a little jittery. Maybe I mixed up the sugar with like crystal meth or something. But that's what I felt like this morning.
I need to introduce you to the wonders of a French press, my friend.
Right. Yeah, so that's really all I got, man.
Well, Brandon, you got any updates?
Nope. Like I said, we're heading down to Virginia this weekend for another master test. And then our next test after that is going to be about mid-November. We're heading down to South Carolina for a double master. Other than that, we're just going to be duck hunting, man. I'm going to let him do what he was bred to do, duck hunt.
Well, hey, let me ask you this. I know you're talking about running him in the Grand maybe next fall. Have you given any thought to doing the Upland Hunter? And because I know where I'm located, November is like the hot month for Upland as far as HRC. Have you looked into any of that?
I have, yeah. I have a couple buddies with my what was local HRC group. I actually just moved probably a month ago. But back where I used to live, Michigan Hunting Retriever Club, I have a few guys there that do the Upland stuff every year. So probably going to get in touch with them and do some of that Upland, because, you know, obviously at the Grand, the fifth series is Upland. So I wouldn't mind getting that title under his belt as well. And, you know, it'd just be something fun, another something that we can do, you know. So.
Right. The season never ends.
Never.
No days off.
Nope.
Right.
I don't know if our listeners have made it this long. Hopefully they have. But my birthday is Friday, this Friday the 16th. So if you haven't already, I'll go ahead and post my address in the description of this episode. Feel free to send me whatever you think I deserve, unless it's a burning brown bag, in which case keep that to yourself. But if you're cheap and you don't want to send me a gift, the least you can do is leave us a 5-star review or 4 if you think we did an awful job this episode, and give us a little review, type us up something. That way other people can hear how much you absolutely love our episode.
Also, reach out to us on our Instagram page at Operation Gundog. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, any ideas you have for future episodes, any guests that you would like to hear. I know Brandon, like as we mentioned before, was a pretty popular item. Again, thanks, Brandon. We were happy to host you today. Hope you enjoyed it as well.
I did. I appreciate you guys having me on. It was nice chatting with y'all.
Awesome. Well, with that being said, thank you to everyone who listened to us thus far, and we look forward to having you back next week.